2-2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Knocked him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, April 27, 2016. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host tonight, along with my partner, Jim Chet Chesko. Chet, we got a lot to talk about again this week, and a good deal of it has to do with the quarterback position of the Philadelphia Eagles. We're also going to be talking Flyers playoffs, and what about those 10-10 Phillies? They have as many wins as your 10-9-8-76ers did all season.
Yeah, the Phils accomplished in 4 weeks what it took the Sixers 5.5 months to do. Pretty wild. But tonight, draft night eve, if you're listening to us live, we're going to spend at least half the program discussing, as you said, football, because the Eagles, well, they just keep giving us stuff to talk about.
Well, this is going to be our third week in a row talking Eagles draft. And first we had Ray Dittinger, and followed by Fran Duffy last week, who was both were fantastic. And now we welcome back Bleeding Green Nation Editor-in-Chief Brandon Lee Galton for a special Draft Eve show, as you said. Brandon, welcome back.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
All right. Well, hey, before we get started, we want to let our listeners know that we will have our Carl's Cards and Collectibles trivia question back again tonight. We'll be giving away a signed color 8x10 photo of Penn State Heisman Trophy winner John Cappelletti. As we said, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call and correctly answer our trivia question. We will be asking that question right about 7:29 or so. So our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer that trivia question, you can write this down so you have it, 929-477-2855. That's 929-477-2855. Well, hey, with that business out of the way, Brandon and Chet, I want to start you guys off with something I'm finding really interesting. Last night on my plane trip from Philly to Orlando, I'm watching the NFL Network mock draft on free TV on the airplane. They have about 10 guys around the table going pick by pick, Steve Mariucci, Michael Irvin, Maurice Jones-Drew, those kind of guys. And the first pick in the draft was Carson Wentz to the Rams, with Jared Goff going to the Eagles. Brandon, let's start with you, and what do you think of that scenario?
I don't think it's going to happen. I think there's been way, way, way too much smoke about Wentz going to the Eagles, and that not only just because I don't think that's misdirection. I mean, I think that's legit. I think even if you put that aside and just think logically, all right, you know, the Rams have the number one overall pick. They're in a new market in Los Angeles. Are they really going to take the Division I FCS quarterback? Are they going to take the quarterback that played in the same state, California, at Cal, who has a lot more experience and who is probably more ready, I would say, to play right now? And they need a starter right now, or else they're going to be starting Case Keenum this season. So I think Goff is definitely the pick at one.
I got to be honest, Bill, over the past week, I've begun to fall in love with Carson Wentz. He doesn't know yet, but yeah, we're having a little bit of a bromance, me and Carson. I'm really getting enthused about the prospect of Wentz joining the Eagles. I know Goff may be more pro-ready right now, but I think Wentz is the better long-term prospect. He's got great size. He's more athletic. Seems to be pretty personable. Yeah, I admit it. I'm on the Wentz wagon, and I'd be very disappointed if the Birds ended up with Goff.
Well, I wanted to tell you something else that I saw on that show, and then we'll get on with the Eagles draft, but something I thought that was really cool. They did a Skype interview with Paxton Lynch, and he's a pretty cool guy. And what they were saying is that his family is running out of bowling alley for the draft, and they asked him if that's true or whatever, and he said, yeah, he says, we live in a really small house. Of course, the guy's 6'7", 235 pounds. I don't know how small the house can be, but We live in a really small house. We got all kinds of friends and family and all that wanted to come over to be part of all this. So we thought, you know what? Let's go rent out part of the bowling alley. All the kids can come and everybody can be bowling. He says, who wants to sit around and watch the draft on TV all night? I thought that was pretty good.
I'll be watching.
You bet. Well, Chet, let's get this thing rolling and let's see what we can get out of Brandon. I know he's got a ton of information.
Oh, yeah. All right, now to review, last week the Eagles traded up to get the Browns pick, number 2 overall in the draft, and indicated they'll be taking a quarterback, presumably Carson Wentz. We hope so anyway. Now, the incumbent Sam Bradford in the last couple of days, a guy who just signed a new contract that guarantees him another $22 million, is ticked off and wants out. Now, Brandon, I heard some of your Bleeding Green Nation podcast on Monday, and you've made it clear how you feel about Sammy's sleeves, but how is all this going to play out, do you think?
Well, I don't think it's going to play out well for Sam Bradford because I think he wants to be traded, and I think the Eagles really just don't have an intention of trading him this year. I think they want him to be their starter. And the thing is, if they want him to be their starter, I mean, it's pretty much – you know, that's their choice, and there's not much he can do about that because he signed the contract, and there's really nothing he can do to get out of it. I mean, he can try to skip these voluntary workouts, and that's fine. It doesn't really – there's no penalty for him there. But as soon as the mandatory events come, he's going to be losing money. And at some point, you know, he might realize that missing these practices is only going to hurt him when it comes to knowing the offense and trying to be the best he can be this season. Even if he knows he might not have a future in Philadelphia beyond this year, you know, he's still going to want to play and have a good season. So at least he can, you know, find another team willing to take him on next season. So I think, you know, this really isn't smart by Sam Bradford. I feel like the Eagles are going to win out in this situation in the long run.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of Stephen A. Smith, but I think he actually nailed it with what he said on Tuesday. Bradford, he said, has a lot of damn nerve. He's acting like a proven commodity that's getting screwed over when, in fact, all the Eagles are doing is looking out for their future by drafting a quarterback of the future. He went on to say, it comes across as incredibly childish and weak on his part. Bradford's considering, you know, how non-productive that he has been. So he's, you know, childish and weak in the mind of Stephen A. Smith. Are there any scenarios where Bradford will be traded? Are there other teams who can use him? You know, we hear Denver, we hear maybe the Jets. Do you think there could be a way they could get him out of town?
I don't think they would trade him unless it was a really good offer. And I just don't see a good offer coming this way because you look at how it kind of free agency was handled and Bradford didn't test the market. And I think that's really because he and Tom Condon, his agent, really anticipated that there wouldn't be a market or else they would just go out or they would have gone out and try to get, you know, teams leveraging or at least use them to leverage against each other and try to get the best deal he could. I think he realized that was going to be a weak market and he took the best deal that he could from the Eagles, knowing that that was going to be the best thing and that if he went out in the market, there wouldn't be interest. And that's going to drive his price down because, you know, there would have been a realization that there isn't a demand for Sam Bradford. And I don't think anything's really changed too much since then. I think, you know, if you're looking at potential Sam Bradford suitors, I really don't think the Jets are in the mix. Jeff Darlington of the NFL Network says they're not interested in him. And I think they're going to re-sign Ryan Fitzpatrick anyway at some point. Also looking to draft one possibly. And then you look at the San Francisco 49ers. Bradford apparently doesn't want to play there, which doesn't necessarily matter. They want him, and the Eagles want to trade him. But I think, you know, why would the 49ers want another quarterback who doesn't want to play there if they already have that Colin Kaepernick, possibly? So I really think it comes down to Denver. And with the Broncos, they're still in the mix for Kaepernick, reportedly. And I just don't see why they would be in a rush to go and get Sam Bradford at this point.
Well, Brandon, how much of this do you think is attributed more to Tom Condon and that this is agent speak in order to try to create something for Bradford for the long haul? And when it all gets said and done, Bradford shows up and it's obviously at this point it's backfired against Condon if that were the case. But Bradford shows up, he's ready to play, and he's ready to do what he's supposed to do. What's your take on that?
I think Tom Condon and Sam Bradford are honestly trying to make the Philadelphia fans pretty much hate him. I think they're trying to almost make the team. Well, yeah, it has worked. See, and it's a good strategy because it's pretty much the only thing they can do to kind of force the Eagles' hand. They're trying to make it so that, you know, there's a lot of fan pressure that the Eagles are going to feel, that the Eagles feel like they need to cut him or trade him. But I think the Eagles aren't going to give into that. I don't think they're going to cave. I think they're going to say, nice try, and just say, no, we're not trading you. We're not cutting you. You're going to have to show up eventually. And if you don't, I mean, you're only hurting yourself at that point because, like I said, then you're not starting this season, and then you're not trying to create an opportunity for yourself for 2017 to play, because if he sits out this year, the Eagles can just cut him, and then who's really going to want him next year? And if someone does want him, it's not going to be at the price it would have been if he just played out this season and did his best and, you know, seeing if he just have a good season and try to earn that next contract. Even if it's not in Philadelphia, at least he would have an opportunity to go out in free agency, or the Eagles might be able to trade him. I just think, you know, it's going to come to a point where he's just going to have to show up and play.
Yep, I'm with you.
Yeah, well, you know, I thought it was interesting, the whole timing of this. Of course, there's not a lot of time between the trade and the draft. You know, it's a small window. But, you know, Eagles fans were going crazy, almost killing Carson Wentz because we gave up so much to get him when we haven't even picked him yet. And that quick, Carson Wentz went away and Sam Bradford became the bum of the day. And Eagles fans now, like say, if they wanted to make Eagles fans mad, they did a good job.
Sorry, was there a question?
No, it was more just more of a follow-up, just more of a statement.
Yeah, I mean, go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I just wanted to say, yeah, it kind of is funny how it shifted quickly from, you know, people kind of being more angry at the trade itself to just being really angry at Sam Bradford. And again, I think that's almost just intentional from Tom Condon. I mean, you look at some of the statements he said this week and about how, like, you know, Bradford doesn't want to be in a place where the Eagles fans are going to boo him because then, you know, they're going to want to put the rookie in. I mean, well, look, you know, Tom Condon, if you're listening, and if Sam Bradford's playing bad at any point, whether the Eagles drafted a rookie or not, people are going to boo him and want him replaced. So he said some pretty crazy things. I almost feel like they have to be intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Taking a break from the quarterback mess, and that is my word for it right now, a mess. Just wanted to get your take, Brandon, on what you thought of Howie Roseman's various moves from January through March. I'm talking the contract extensions, the trades of Murray, Sanchez, Alonzo, and Maxwell, and the free agent signings of Brandon Brooks, Stefan Wisniewski, Nigel Bradham, Rodney McLeod, and Ruben Randall. How did Howie do over those first 3 months?
I think he did good overall. You know, I'm a person who has been very skeptical of Howie Roseman, but I always think his strength has been working with contracts and that kind of deal. I think, you know, he's a pretty good sense of value and reading the market, especially compared to, you know, look at Chip Kelly overpaying for guys like DeMarco Murray and Byron Maxwell. I don't think you'll see Howie Roseman do that as much. I think the contracts are friendlier, and, you know, the players he picked are a lot of them are. Most part are younger guys with upside, as opposed to like paying a guy like DeMarco Murray, who was clearly coming off a big workload, or a guy like Byron Maxwell, who was maybe benefiting more from playing in a good defense. So I think Howie's done a good job with that stuff. I think really the biggest question mark is his draft evaluation. And, you know, that's where we are at this point. We're kind of wondering, you know, all right, he's made these good moves in free agency and everything, but now can he nail the draft picks? And it's really critical that he does, because as we know, the Eagles gave up a number of draft picks to go get Carson Wentz at number two or Jared Goff, depending on who they take. And they still have draft picks remaining. They have 7 in total, but a lot of them are outside of obviously the higher round. So it's really going to have to come down to really nailing some of those late round picks.
Well, speaking of the free agents, how do you feel about the offensive line and Wisniewski in particular? Do you feel like if we don't get a lineman in the third with that third round pick or even later that's going to be able to help us, do you think we've helped ourselves enough in free agency to be better than we were last year with the guys that we've been able to get thus far?
I definitely think Brandon Brooks at right guard is a big upgrade just because he's had some good seasons down there in Houston. He's athletic. He's big. I think he's going to come in and be a big upgrade there, especially because the Eagles didn't really have much there anyway with the likes of Matt Tobin or Andrew Gardner or Dennis Kelly or whoever was filling in at that spot. So I think him alone is a big upgrade. Lane Johnson is still your right tackle. I think Jason Kelce wasn't really healthy last year, and I think that was evident because he was struggling way more often than he had in the past. I mean, he was a Pro Bowl player, and then he goes from that to being really bad last season. So I think, you know, just getting healthy will benefit him, and also having better guard play next to him could really help him out. Jason Peters is obviously your left tackle. It's concerning because he was battling through injuries last year and clearly not the same player he is in his prime maybe, but the Eagles trust in him to be the left tackle. So we'll see. We'll just assume that's okay for now because, you know, for as concerning as it is Jason Peters getting up there at the end of his career and everything, I still think he's still a special talent. And then left guard is really the position that is a big question mark. You had mentioned Steven Wisniewski. I think he's in the mix there. I think Alan Barber is still in the mix there. You could be looking at a guy like second-year player Malcolm Bunch who might try to push for a job there. Andrew Gardner, possibly. I mean, the Eagles have options at left guard. They might draft one, too, at some point to compete. So I think the offensive line isn't necessarily awesome, but I do think just by adding Brooks alone and adding more competition, like a guy Wisniewski at left guard, they've upgraded at least a little bit.
All right, so as you mentioned, they have 7 picks in total, that number 2 overall pick. There's 1 third-round pick. They lost the other one in the trade. Then they have 5 picks over rounds 5, 6, and 7. What do you think they'll do in terms of addressing other positions in those rounds 3 through 7? What are they going to target?
Yeah, you definitely need to help out the offensive line like we were just talking about at some point. The Eagles have not drafted an offensive lineman since Lane Johnson in 2013. So it's been a while since they've been able to do that, and that's something they need to do at some point. At least one offensive lineman, if not multiple, especially at tackle, because for as much as guard might be an immediate need, obviously, like we talked about, Jason Peters is getting up there. You're going to need someone who can play tackle and potentially replace him. You're probably still looking at a position like safety, because while you have Malcolm and Jenkins and Rodney McLeod as your starters, you don't really have much depth behind them. So you're looking for a guy who can kind of be potentially the third safety and also contribute on special teams. Running back is a huge need. I mean, for as much as I think Ryan Matthews has some talent and I like him in a limited role, I don't think he can be your full workload kind of guy for the entire season just because he gets hurt. He's been hurt almost every year of his career and he fumbles. So I don't think he's a guy you can really be counting on for the whole season. So they almost have to draft a running back at some point.
Well, Brandon, a lot's been said about the offense in this offseason, but anything much being said about the defense is all being wrapped around Jim Schwartz as the new defensive coordinator. And, you know, we've got a couple pieces we brought in, a couple pieces have gone away. Do you think the scheme that Schwartz is going to bring and he's a fiery kind of guy, you think he can bring enough to make that defense, let's just say, let's call it top 12.
I think there's potential there for that because I think, you know, you look at this Eagles defense last year and for as bad as it finished, you know, there was a stretch earlier on the season where I honestly believe they were one of the better defenses in football. It just really got unraveled there at the end when key players like Benny Logan and Jordan Hicks got injured and we saw the effect of Chip Kelly's offense and the fast pace that plays, that kind of starts to wear on the defense because they were pretty much on the field for most of the season there, especially early on. So I think, you know, this unit has potential because you're still looking at a very strong defensive line. You brought Vinnie Curry back, and I think he's going to be even better in the 4-3 attacking as opposed to being a 3-4 defensive end where he's kind of reading and reacting. You still have Fletcher Cox, Benny Logan, Connor Barwin is still there. So you still have some really good defensive linemen. Linebackers, there's potential there. I think it's kind of more of a question mark because they're shifting to the new scheme, so I don't want to assume they're all going to be great again. But, you know, we obviously saw how good Jordan Hicks looked as a rookie. Michael Kendricks, I think, was kind of down last season. I think he has the potential to bounce back a little bit because he was really good in 2014. Nigel Bradham had a really good season under Jim Schwartz. His best season came when Jim Schwartz was his defensive coordinator, so we see how he does there. You look at your cornerbacks, I don't think you have any stars there. Maybe Eric Rowe can be developed into a number one guy, but we'll see. And I think the safeties are potentially the best in the NFL with the combination of Jenkins and McLeod, if not the best, maybe at least top two or top three or so. So I think, you know, there's potential there for that kind of top 12 unit, as you would say. And I think, you know, you look at just the resume Jim Schwartz has. Any time he's been defensive coordinator, he's pretty much had a top seven defense in his last experiences as a defensive coordinator.
Hey, Brandon, we're running out of time. We're going to put you in the Fast Five hot seat in a minute, but it's possible I may actually see you and your Bleeding Green Nation crew in person Thursday night. Tell us what BGN has planned for draft night.
Yeah, that would be great. And for anyone listening, we'd love to see you there at Nick's Roast Beef on Cotman. Draft party starts at 7 p.m. BGN Radio, Philly Influencer. Should be fun. We're doing some giveaways. Obviously going to be watching the draft, reacting, and we'll also be having a live BGN Radio draft show. And for those who want to come and be a part of it, you know, you can definitely be there. So I would definitely say coming out, and I'd love to see you guys there.
I'll be there.
All right. Well, Brandon, as Chet mentioned, we do, I think you're aware of this. You might actually gone through it once before when you were with us. We call it the Fast Five, where basically, Chet asks you five relatively easy questions, and you provide the answers. You up for that?
Sure thing.
All right. Brandon Lee Gowton, on a scale of 1 to 10, what's your degree of confidence in Howie Roseman as a guy in charge of the draft?
Ooh, the draft, I would say 5.
That sounds about right. What is the best move that Howie's made over the last 4 months?
The best move he's made over the last 4 months? You know, I'm going to say it's trading up for the quarterback because this is the move that really either makes or breaks the franchise. It really makes or breaks his tenure here. You know, if the quarterback risk pays off, you have a franchise quarterback. The Eagles haven't had one of those since Donovan McNabb. If it doesn't,
got it.
I think it's a position where they know they need to move on from Howie Roseman and Doug Peterson and everyone else involved.
Speaking of which, the quarterback, Eagles' most likely opening day quarterback, Sam Bradford, Chase Daniel, Wentz or Goff or someone else?
I'm going to say it's Sam Bradford. I think they're going to try to make it work.
All right. Number 4, who is the Birds' worst first-round pick of the last 20 years?
Oh, to me, it has to be Danny Watkins because, you know, there's players out there who I think try hard and they just might not be very good or something like that. But I think it was clear Danny Watkins has never even really truly loved football. And for some reason, he was drafted and he was 27 years old or 26 years old anyway. So it was never a good idea. And I think that was just the worst to me.
Yeah, he's number 1. I think John Harris, number 2 for me. And finally, Brandon, who will win more games in 2016? Doug Peterson's Eagles or Chip Kelly's 49ers?
You know, the 49ers were actually somehow worse than people realized. I think at least you look at their point differential and I think they were second. You look at how they finished by Football Outsiders advanced metrics, and they were dead last. I think it's crazy they won as many games as they did last year, and they didn't win very many games. I think they have potentially the worst roster in the NFL, so I think the Eagles will win more games than them because also it's just an easier division being in the NFC East.
Yep. All right, Brandon, thanks for playing Fast Five. Good job.
Hey, Brandon, I have one more question for you. Before we go, let's go back to the beginning here. And the whole I asked the same question of Ray Didinger just the other night, 2 weeks ago. I'll ask you the same. What was your take on the whole hiring of Doug Peterson and the whole process and the guys that maybe you thought they should have interviewed? And, you know, Peterson wasn't the most sought-after guy around, and all of a sudden he's our head coach. How'd you feel about all that?
I don't think the process was clean. I'll put it that way. I think it was kind of a messy process in the sense that, you know, they interviewed Doug Peterson, I think, on a Sunday after the Chiefs lost to the Patriots. And then right after that, the Eagles kind of made a hard push to get Ben McAdoo, who the Giants eventually ended up hiring. And they also reportedly reached out to Tom Coughlin after they interviewed Doug Peterson. So I think they kind of, you know, went into an interview with Peterson, and I don't think it's like they were necessarily really in love with him as much as they kind of had to almost default back to him and know that this was a head coach they were hiring who wasn't going to be a threat to Howie Roseman like Chip Kelly had been. So I think they kind of got their yes man in him. And, you know, I think coaching hires are kind of a crapshoot to some extent, so I don't think it's like he's necessarily – destined to fail or anything, but I certainly don't think it was the most inspiring hire.
Gotcha. Well, hey, before we wrap it up, Brandon, how about you give the listeners an update on all the things you have going on? You write, you broadcast, you do all kinds of stuff. Why don't you give everybody an update on where they can listen to your things or read your things?
Yeah, I'm a busy guy. You can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Gowton. It's BrandonGowton. Obviously, read my work at BleedingGreenNation.com. You can listen to our podcast. It's BGN Radio. As I already said earlier, definitely come out to the BGN Radio draft party. And I think that's about it.
All right. How often?
I'll see you at the party.
When is your Bleeding Green podcast on? Is that something you do every week?
We would do it depending pretty much how news goes and everything. I think we've had at least 3 podcasts in the last week just because it's been busy, but at least once a week. And we try to do as many as we can, pretty much.
Awesome. Okay. All right, Brandon. Well, we certainly appreciate your time. Great information as always. And I won't get to see you on Thursday, but hopefully Chet can. And I'm sure it'll be – I'm going to try to listen in, actually. But I'm sure it'll be great.
I'll see you there.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Okay, Brandon. Thanks. All right, Chet. Good stuff. We'll get back. We'll recap a little bit of that after the break in our trivia. But let's go ahead and take our break and thank our sponsor, ShopForKisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. By logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website, you become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. Well, Chet, are you ready for some trivia tonight?
Bring it on.
All right, here we go. We're about right on schedule. So we said 7:29, my clock's saying 7:28. So we're pretty close.
Yep.
Okay, first of all, for anyone that's listening, our shopforkisses.org phone line to answer this trivia question is 929-477-2855. As mentioned, we will be giving away a signed color 8x10 photo of Penn State Heisman Trophy winner John Cappelletti, courtesy of Carl's Cards and Collectibles, to the first person that can call and correctly answer the trivia question. And Chet, because it's a Cappy picture, we're going with a Cappy question. When John Cappelletti won the Heisman Trophy with 1,057 points, the runner-up had just about half at 524 points, and he was a lineman from Ohio State. What was his name?
And this is back in the early 70s, by the way.
Yeah, well, and I specifically did not give the year because the year would have made it very easy to Google. So you got to.
I didn't give it either.
You know, you got to at least know that or whatever. But then again, if you look at the photo that we posted that we're giving away, I believe it says it on there.
Yep.
So the question again: When John Cappelletti won the Heisman Trophy with 1,057 points, the runner-up that year had 524 points, and he was a lineman from Ohio State. What was his name. All right, Chet, while we're waiting on some callers for that, anything that Brandon said surprise you?
Not really, and I think he agrees with me that Carson Wentz is the better option than Jared Goff, so hopefully that's what's going to happen. And I think he also agrees that I think Sam Bradford is being kind of a big baby about this whole thing. You know, when you signed a two-year deal, you know you're probably not the long-term answer. And from what it sounds, what we're hearing, you know, from Bradford via his agent, they were okay with the Eagles drafting a quarterback if he was like in the third or fourth round. But because they traded up to number two, it's suddenly a big problem. And, you know, there goes his security. There goes the chance that he's going to actually win the job and stay there. Yeah, maybe they do expect a number two overall pick to be the guy down the road. But here's an idea. Go out and play like it's your job. You know, you're either going to win the job and keep the job and keep this guy on the bench for, you know, a couple of years, or you're going to show off that you are a good quarterback and you're going to build up your own resume and somebody else is going to want you and pay you a lot of money next year. And it doesn't sound like Bradford's willing to do that.
Yeah, you know, like I say, I kind of, when it first started out, I kind of had the feeling that maybe this was just, as I was saying, maybe it was agent speak, you know, trying to create something. But it has gone a little further than that, I think, at this point. And I'm really surprised. I'm really surprised. Like you say, and you and I talked about this when it actually happened, that the yep. that the two-year deal was not much of a commitment for by the Eagles. And was it fair to Doug Peterson to have somebody, you know, only signed for 2 years? But, again, at that time, the Eagles were still sitting at 13. They certainly surely didn't think they were going to get to two. They had to be happy to get to eight, where they probably weren't getting one of these quarterbacks. So, you know, and from the Eagles' standpoint, I think they're trying to better themselves and for the long haul. And if they get one of these guys and they turn out to be Peyton Manning and not the other guy that went away, you know, that didn't make it, they're in good shape.
Yeah, and boy, what a difference a week makes. When it first happened last week, I was kind of against the trade, thinking the Eagles gave up too much. But the more I think about it and the more I see about Carson Wentz, I'm all for it now. I think you got to take a gamble once in a while. He's not a sure thing, can't miss guy, but he certainly has all the tools. I think he's got what it takes to succeed. Yeah, he may have to sit for a year, but I think he's going to be a good pro, maybe even a great pro, who knows. And I'm happy that they did it, and I hope it works out for them.
All right. Well, hey, we have a caller for a trivia question. Who do we have on the line tonight?
Hello?
Hello.
Hello.
Who we have?
Well, I go by many names. Dan the Man, Deathbed Danny, but you know me best as the Philly Press Box Champion.
Are you calling from some other number? If you were, I would have bypassed you.
Well, I am.
Are you supposed
See,
to be
thought,
working?
That's what I thought. That's what I thought was happening before. That's why I call from a different number. No.
So who would be the answer to the trivia question, sir?
That would be Ohio State offensive tackle John Hicks.
That
ding,
would
ding,
be.
Ding, 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 ding.
That would be John Hicks. You are correct, sir.
I warned those guys on Facebook that I was coming to play tonight.
Danny does it again.
All right,
the only one
Danny,
that could have possibly beat me, the only one that could have possibly beat me, was the legend Fred Hugo.
Well,
yeah, Fred's pretty good too.
Fred's pretty good. He beat me out one time. Yeah, he is.
Well, hey, while we have you right quick for just a minute, you've been posting all kinds of stuff. You're hating the trade. Now you're hating Bradford. Who do you hate the least today?
Well, I don't hate anybody. I didn't like the trade. I thought they had a chance to build this team a little bit, fill a lot of holes. They've gone in another direction. I've succumbed to the reality, and I'm on board with the Carson Wentz deal, you know. I mean,
there
I'm an
go.
Eagles fan, you know. I bleed green, so – Go Carson Wentz. I'm all for it.
Hey,
if that's
Bill.
Who they take.
Hey, Bill, I'll tell you who Danny
yes,
hates the least. Danny hates the least, Carl Henderson.
Yes.
I love Carl Henderson. the word hate doesn't even go in the same sentence as that.
I know it.
I love Big C. He's my main man. I wish I lived next door to Carl. In fact, I wish he would adopt me.
Yeah. Carl's a good man.
Oh, geez. All right, Danny. Well, we appreciate it. And as always, we appreciate you listening. And glad you got the win again.
Thank you very much, fellas. Great show.
All right, Danny. Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right, Chad, hey, let's slide over and talk about the Flyers. They made a valiant run at the President's Cup against the President Cup winning Capitals, going six games toe-to-toe. But at the end of the day, you score six goals in six games, not going to win.
You know, Bill, when we talked about this series 2 weeks ago, I said the keys to a possible upset of the Caps by the Flyers were to play disciplined hockey and stay out of the penalty box and to take advantage of some of the power plays that you might end up getting. Well, they didn't either. Too many penalties, which the Caps did take advantage of eight times in six games. The Flyers, well, they managed just one power play goal, and the Flyers could just never seem to get in a groove offensively. So you got to give the Caps credit for a lot of that. The word you used, Bill, when we texted back and forth a couple of times during the games was smothering. The Caps defenders just smothered the Flyers, never allowing them to get set up and in the kind of positions that they wanted to be in. So, you know, give Washington credit, but the Flyers just didn't really have any answers. And, yeah, six goals in six games, that's not going to win you a series.
No, and you know, the smothering thing I was talking about is it seemed to me watching the games – even when the Flyers were on the power play, they never got set and they never looked like they had an extra man. They were 1-for-24 on the power play. That's I hate to tell you this, Chet, that's 4.2%.
Yeah, that's not good.
That's not good. 1-for-24 versus 8-for-27. And, you know, I think in even strength, I believe this is right. I believe the Caps may have been plus one or a zero or something like that. But, hey, you can't – the special teams let them down. Now, I do want to ask you this because people have been giving Flyers guys a beating. Claude Giroux, Wayne Simmonds, no goals. Jake Voracek, one goal. Braden Schenn, I believe, one goal. How do you feel about that? And I'll give you a little lead in from my opinion on this thing. Those other guys on the other team are good too. And, I just don't know that, certainly we wanted production. This team was offensively challenged all season long. And they came up against a really good team. And I don't know that we're not good enough. I think we certainly need a scorer, somebody else in the mix, but I think it's a little rough to beat up on some of these individuals. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to disagree with you on this. I think you do have to beat them up a little bit. Giroux was pretty much invisible much of the time. Voracek, the same. I'll give him a little bit of a dispensation because he was, you know, still coming back from the injury. He never seemed to be the same after he came back from the injury. Simmonds didn't have a great series. He took another couple of penalties that he shouldn't have. But I mean, Giroux, look, compared to the Washington forwards, Giroux was, like I said, non-existent. I'm not going to give them pass. They got to come up better than that. I know they're playing a good team, but I got to see more from these guys. Now, Braden Schenn didn't score, but I thought Braden Schenn played really tough. He was out there throwing his body around every single game. It's unfortunate he got a three-game suspension now to start the next season, but I thought Schenn actually played pretty well. I do think they still need a little more firepower from the forward spot. I don't know, you know, how much they have down on the farm. I know they got a couple of guys who we've discussed in the past who we may see next year, but I still think if they have any kind of money in free agency that they're going to have to go out and get somebody. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do to remedy this in the offseason.
Yeah, and you know, speaking of that Schenn suspension, I'm not getting that, Chet. I mean, there were all kinds of cheap shots and all kinds of stuff that happened in that series. and to pick out that one particular hit that didn't even knock him into the boards, I really don't understand that out of everything that happened throughout that series.
Yeah, I was really surprised at the whole suspension. I mean, that was not one of the big crushing, you know, potential injurious type hits that we saw during the series. So, boy, I was really surprised to see that. Now, the other thing I wanted to talk about was the goalie situation. We saw how well Neuvirth played. And you got to think, you know, man, what if they had gone to him in game three just to shake things up after losing the first two games? What if they went to him in game three and were actually able to win game three? I think you'd have a different series and they might be playing game seven right now as we speak. But, you know, hindsight is 20/20, I guess.
Well, yeah, and you know, I think, again, the timing of that whole thing, you know, they're certainly not in the playoffs if Mason isn't playing just crazy good for 6 weeks. And then they get in the playoffs, and he seemed to lose a bit of focus. But then who thinks Neuvirth's going to come in and just be crazy, crazy good?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know how you could have possibly planned that other than, like you say, let's just make a move to try to shake something up.
Yep. And you know, I asked our pal Bill Meltzer last week when the season ended. I said, so let me be the first to ask you, who's going to be the number one goalie starting for the Flyers next fall? He said, well, they're probably going to be 1A and 1B again. So they'll both get a lot of playing time and just, you know, see who gets hot near the end of the season.
Yeah. Well, you know, the other thing I really thought was interesting, a couple more points on this, the play of Colin McDonald. When he came up, you know, he ended up playing three games. He comes up for one game, and he was all over the ice, and he was energy. He was hitting people. He was making plays. He ended up with no points, but his effort and stepping in, and to the point that they couldn't take him out of the lineup once they brought him in. They had to rotate through injuries to keep him in the lineup. But I thought a guy like him just brought a whole bunch of different energy that they didn't seem to have.
Yeah, he did, and that was good to see. And, you know, losing Couturier was another big blow to the Flyers, of course. You know, he got hurt in the first game. That was something that really hurt the Flyers, I think, in that series, because not only can the guy give you a little bit of offense, he's also a great defensive forward.
Yeah. Well, and two other guys I got to give a shout-out to that, although there were many more that I thought played pretty well, Radko Gudas and Nick Schultz were like rocks back there on that blue line. I don't know what the total number was of block shots that those two ended up with, but I just thought those guys, and even though Gudas ends up minus two for the series, and Schultz ended up a plus one, but it just seemed like they were just everywhere. And, you know, they just had to be beat up. Each of them probably took a couple dozen Ovechkin shots off some body part.
Yeah, Schultz, what did he block, six shots in that one game? He was very impressive. And you mentioned Ovechkin. Boy, you know, you want to criticize him for all the early playoff losses by the Caps over the years, but that guy's a player. I mean, we knew that, obviously. But watching him closely for six games, he is a bona fide superstar for sure.
Yeah, and he is, and you know, he reminded me of 88 skating around that ice. I mean, he hit anything and everything, and no one seemed to want any part of him in return.
Yeah, I didn't realize he was as big as he is or as big a hitter as we saw in that series, so I was really impressed with his all-around game.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I think there's a lot of upside. Obviously, some guys aren't going to be around next year. They've got some decisions to make. I know one of the decisions they have to make is on Braden Schenn, and that'll be a tough decision to make. But some young players, we'll see if they're ready to go or not. But there'll be a new look, Flyers, and come next year. But I think there's got to be a whole lot of energy coming into camp next time, and hopefully we're not a bubble playoff team, that we're in the mix a little bit.
Yeah, I hope so. And I want to see these the young guys who, you know, were down in Lehigh this past year, Konechny and Morin and the other guys. I want to see some of these guys dent the roster and contribute right away, just like Gostisbehere did this season.
Yep. Well, hey, let's jump over. Let's talk about the Fightins. 10-10 after 20 games. They played the Mets 6 times and the Nationals 4 times already, who are pretty darn good teams. But the most part, the Phils, after that first miserable opening series in Cincinnati, have been pretty much holding their own.
Well, yeah, they're 10-7 since that opening series. 2-2 against the Nats through their first 4 meetings. That's impressive, although Washington's 2 wins were blowouts of the Phils. The Mets, well, they still have the Phillies' number at Citizens Bank Park, unfortunately. The Phils, though, have benefited from playing a couple of bad teams, too, specifically the Padres and Brewers. You like to see that. Keep in mind, there's some other bad teams, too. The Braves, who they're going to play a lot, are a pretty bad team. Overall, though, yeah, pleasantly surprised with the 10-10 record. I guess they're 10-6 now that I think about it, because they started 0-4. I'm especially surprised with the turnaround by the embattled bullpen, which, well, that was, you know, pretty good now. It was awful the first series against Cincinnati, but it's been pretty good since then. So all in all, you got to be pleased with a 10-10 start for this club, which has a lot of young guys and still not a whole lot of power.
Yeah, and, you know, I hate to bring this up because we've talked about it for a long time, but the elephant in the room is still Ryan Howard. He's hitting 177. He did hit a few home runs. He's got 4. But he's got 20 strikeouts in 20 games in 62 at-bats, and he's hitting 177. And it's not like he's going to win you a gold glove. He's out of lineup against the lefty tonight with Gio Gonzalez on the mound. But they can't keep doing it this way. They can't keep running him out there.
No, you know, I'm almost ready to just say cut bait. Send him pack and do whatever you have to do. He's 4 for his last 30 with 10 strikeouts over those 30 at-bats. And as you noted, he's also had a couple of miscues in the field. Even though he was never great, he was always, you know, fairly reliable over there. So I've seen enough. He's not going to have that one final solid year that we were hoping for. Do whatever you can to find a home for him somewhere in the American League. And let's move on.
Yeah, and, you know, the way he's swinging the bat, I mean, I think the home for him might be down there on Clearwater Beach. I think he might be done.
Yep. And what about the corner outfielders? Still no power from those guys. It's amazing that they're 10-10, given the lack of power from the corner outfield positions.
Well, yeah, I mean, they're actually 10-10 because they're getting good pitching, and who would have possibly thought that could have happened? But some of these young guys, they're a little inconsistent, overall they're doing okay. They're gonna take some beatings here and there, but overall they're playing pretty good.
How about the Charlie Morton injury? He injured himself on a at bat where he bunted to try to get the guy out of second base, to sacrifice bunt, and running down to first base on Saturday night, I guess he ripped his hamstring apart. We thought it was a hyperextended knee at first, turned out to be a serious hamstring problem. Usually a hamstring problem is going to keep you out for a few weeks, but his is, I guess, pretty bad, and he's going to miss the whole season. So Charlie Morton, we hardly knew you.
Yeah, that's right. You're exactly right. The other one I wanted to throw out is, of course, Valesquez. We could talk about him probably all night. We'll do that another time. But how about Hector Norris? Where in the world did this guy come from? He's pitched in 11 games and 12 innings, giving up 1 run as the setup man. All of a sudden, we have a setup man in Neres, and we have a closer in Gomez. Who are those guys?
Yeah, well, it's funny. You started the season not knowing who the closer and the setup guy were going to be. We thought it might be Andrew Bailey. We thought it might be Hernandez. It turns out your closer is Genmar Gomez, and as you mentioned, Hector Neres is the setup guy. Go figure. I guess Pete McCann was just kind of playing it by ear, and after that first series, it just kind of all fell into place. So, yeah, they're doing a real good job, and let's hope it continues. And you mentioned Velasquez. He's 3-1 now. He had the one bad start, but we'll certainly take that from this guy. Eichhoff, 2-1, didn't pitch great the other night, but I like what he brings to the table. Nola, I guess he's only 1-2 at this point, but he's going to be okay. So I think it's going to be a fun season. They're not going to compete for the division. They might not win 80 games like we hoped. They might be closer to our 70 prediction or 72, whatever it was. But they're fun to watch, just to watch these guys develop.
Yep, Yep. Well, I'm looking forward to it too. And you know, my man that I like, you know, I like Odubel, and you know, he's a little slow. You know, he's hitting 288, so he's coming out okay. But he's got 19 walks already in 20 games, and that's you know, you're a well over 120, 125 walk pace if you keep that up. His on base percentage, Chet, is 442. And even though he's only hitting 288, his on base percentage 442 is pretty darn good.
Yeah, I'm really impressed with what he's done so far. We were a little worried about him, you know, maybe having a little bit of a sophomore slump. But he's doing okay, and I was really impressed with what I saw Saturday night. You mentioned the fact that he's got a lot more walks. They put a graphic up Saturday night that in his first three at-bats, he saw, I think, 20 pitches. So he's being a lot more patient. He's getting the walks. He's getting on base. I like this kid. I think he's going to be a good one.
I do, too. I do, too. Well, hey, let's move on. And we have an interesting guest lined up for next week. We're going somewhere we've never gone before, and I need to learn about this as well. So who do we have joining us next week?
Well, after 3 weeks of Eagles draft talk and the draft finally going to be out of the way Thursday night, Friday, and Saturday, my brain pretty much fried. So I thought we needed something completely different, and we have just that next week. Someone who can help us with all of our worries and concerns, Bill. It's the nationally known sports psychologist, Dr. Joel Fish. Dr. Fish can talk to us about the mental aspect of sports and maybe just maybe, why Philadelphia sports fans are so passionate and perhaps a little more excitable than fans in other parts of the country. So I have a lot of questions to ask Dr. Fish, and it's going to be a fun show.
Well, I'm going to have to do my research, because as you were talking, I was thinking it would be interesting to talk the mental side of the Philadelphia fans that always seem to want to jump off a bridge. And, you know, just this week, I thought it was interesting, and I was going to talk about this a little bit in my parting shot, but I'll leave that parting shot alone. But I'll throw it out here, is I thought it was interesting that the Philadelphia fans were, in three consecutive days, basically, they were killing Claude Giroux, killing Carson Wentz, and killing Sam Bradford.
Yeah.
All within three days, we were after three different guys. And maybe the good thing is each took the attention off of the other one, and now the pointer is on Sam Bradford. And Claude Giroux has slid off into the offseason, and Carson Wentz maybe is going to get a chance because we'd rather have him than Bradford.
Yeah, I'm going to disagree with you about Wentz. I don't think they were ever killing Wentz. I think some people were just upset with the trade, but it wasn't really a personal thing with Wentz. But Giroux, yeah, because he, like we said, kind of disappeared during the playoffs. And Bradford, because, hey, he's being kind of a whining baby right now. So, hey, it's deserved. And as a Philly fan, we deserve that ability. We deserve the right to boo and to criticize when it's justified.
And that's our rite of passage as Philly sports
Absolutely.
Fans.
Absolutely. Yep.
All right. Good stuff. All right. Well, hey, let's get our signing updated, Carl's Cards and Collectibles out there, Chet. Last Saturday, as you know, Carl had John Cappelletti in his store, and Cappy didn't disappoint. A great turnout to see a terrific guy. And, Chet, I know you made a showing at Carl's Cards to see Cappy.
I did. I talked briefly to John Cappelletti, and you had told me in advance that he's a real classy guy, and boy, were you right. Very personable, and he seemed genuinely happy, by the way, to know that I'm a fellow Penn State alum. What I didn't like, he was 5 years ahead of me, and he looks younger than me. I don't like that.
Well, I don't know what you'd say about that. That's a good living, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
Not that you don't have good living.
I have too much good living, I think.
Well, hey, this Saturday, April 30th, the Villanova seniors, Ryan Archidiakono, I practiced that this week, Kevin Rafferty, Henry Lowe, and Patrick Ferrell will all be in the store. That's going to be a great event as well. Carl has some great photos. Some national championship basketballs are in stock. You could buy and have signed. And my understanding is that Daniel Achefu is out of town doing some NBA things, but it's likely to be brought in the near future. So that's going to be a real good signing there as well. I don't know when when you're going to get these guys together. They're going to graduate. Everybody's going to go their own way, and it'll be tough pulling all these guys together. But I saw some of the things that Carl has for sale to get signed, and got some really cool stuff. So check that out. He's got former Flyers Doug Crossman and Ed Boxcar Hospodar, one of my favorite nicknames of all time, will be on the store on May the 7th. Author Rich Westcott and 1956 NBA champion Ernie Beck will be in the store May 14th. NHL Hall of Famer Mark Howe and his brother Marty will be in the store May 21st. And the Father's Day treat, Brian Dawkins, will be in the house on Saturday, June 19th. Stop by Carl's Cards and Collectibles at 22 West Eagle Road in Havertown, PA, or give him a call at 610-789-4996. You can also visit the website, carlscards.com, or contact him on Twitter at Carl's Cards. All right, Chet, a parting shot for you since I've already used mine up.
Yep. Bill, there's an interesting, though slightly disturbing, PSA-type video making the rounds on YouTube and being talked about on Facebook and Twitter this week. It's called Hashtag More Than Mean. Now, in it, three randomly selected men sat across from ESPN's Sarah Spain and Chicago sportscaster Julie DeCaro, both of whom have been outspoken about the prevalence of cyber harassment. And these guys read out loud several mean tweets directed at the two women. The tweets weren't written by these guys, I should point out. The first few tweets were fairly tame, even a bit humorous, but then the next several were pretty nasty. The women were called the B word and the C word in many cases. And the tweeters said things like, "Hopefully this skank Julie DeCaro is Bill Cosby's next victim. That would be classic." Or, "One of the players should beat you to death with a hockey stick." And there were other worse ones that I'm not going to mention. Now, the two women were already aware of these vile tweets, but the guys who were asked to read them had not seen the tweets in advance. So they were, kind of squirming and getting very uncomfortable. The video was made by some guys who host a weekly podcast titled Just Not Sports, with the intent of highlighting the extreme amount of harassment women in sports media face on social media. Let's hope it helps.
Wow. I saw the video, and if I was able to say anything at all after watching it, it was nothing more than wow.
Exactly. That's what I thought. Oh, my God. How can these people be so, mean?
It just goes to prove what can happen behind a keyboard when you don't have to look somebody in the eyes. And here's a bunch of guys who are sports guys or whatever they were having to sit next to a woman and say things that they didn't even say, and how hard it was for them to even bring themselves to saying these things. And they were just reading them. It was
quite powerful.
It was extremely powerful. And I don't know if sad's the right word. I don't know what the right word was, because all I could come up with was, wow.
Yeah.
I saw that because somebody posted it. I don't know where the listeners could go to listen to that if they wanted to just to kind of see what we're talking about. Do you know where they could find
that? You can find it on YouTube, and just to type in More Than Mean, and you'll get to it.
Okay. Yeah, good, great point. Good job. All right. Well, hey, as we get to the top of the hour, let's thank our special guest, Brandon Lee Galton of Bleeding Green Nation, for joining us. Carl's Cards and Collectibles for their continuing support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chetchesko, this is Bill Furman. We hope you will join us next Wednesday, May 4th at 7 p.m. with Dr. Joel Fish. You can listen to our Facebook page or on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio and on both iTunes and Stitcher. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.